Hello everybody. Today we are going to talk about Indian business culture. My name is Narasimha Bhupathi Subramanian. As you can see, I have a lengthy name, people call me Boo. I've done my doctoral thesis on cultural intelligence. My thesis was about Finnish business leaders' experience in India, about their cultural sensitivity and what kind of challenges and issues that they face in terms of culture and leadership and management and things like that. I'm also a certified cultural intelligence facilitator. I've done my pedagogical certification as well. I have both experience in practice in industry and then as well as in academia. I've done work in human resource and consulting, and I have also worked on several projects that involve Finland and India. I've also been advising and consulting companies in terms of doing business with India. At the moment, I work as an entrepreneur. I have my own company named Cultural Analysis International, and through my company, I'm working with Finnish companies who are they are doing business and who want to do business with India. This is a short background of my my qualification and experience. As you can see, that I mean, I just want to give a quick overview about India. India is, as you know, is one of the oldest civilizations in the world. It has a rich cultural heritage, and it's also one of the largest democracies in the world. I mean, there is no living example in the world except India how to run a country of 1.3 billion people as a democratic country. India is also the second biggest populated country in the world after China. Probably in the next 20, 30 years, there is an estimation that prediction that India could overtake China in terms of population. I mean, like the population of India is growing, you know, day by day, minute by minute, second by second, you could say. India is also the second largest economy in terms of purchasing power parity, and it's one of the seventh largest country in the world, I mean, in terms of area-wise. India is also the home to the youngest population. You know, the medium age is like probably like 22 to 23 or 24 years old. So there are a lot of young people in India, so that you could say India is also the youngest, you know, youngest populated country as well. In terms of economy, it's seventh largest, and there is also a prediction that people say that there are various institutions that actually predict that India could actually be in top three economies in the world after USA and China in the next 30, 40 years. India's, you know, in terms of economy, it could go higher, probably from seventh place, it can go to fourth or third in the coming years. India is also the member of BRICS. And break G4 nation and G20 countries. India has an aspiration to become a permanent member of UN Security Council. India also has one of the largest English-speaking population in the world. There is a skilled workforce, a lot of people who are really skilled and who Indians are working all around the world. There is a solid middle class in India that makes India as a market one of the exciting place to do business in India. As the population is huge and it's rapidly growing, you know, India needs a lot of products and services, and the demand and need for products and services are rapidly growing as well. So that's kind of interests many of the companies all around the world to invest in India, to grow in India. Any company which want to grow globally, naturally India will be their choice, as it is second most populated country and it's a solid middle class and huge population. So India is a natural choice for many companies who want to grow their business. And as you can see, pretty much all the top multinationals in the world are existing in India. And still there are a lot of companies are interested to do business in India. How to make sense of India? I think there is a lot of interpretation about India. When you say India, people have a lot of idea about India. Some people relate India with yoga, some people relate India with Bollywood, some people relate India with curry. So there are several kind of interpretation of India, and some people, you know, make sense of India in terms of color, in terms of a lot of people, religion. I mean, there are a lot of interpretation about India, but then again, there is also the other side, how you make sense of India. I think that's what we are going to talk about in terms of how you can make sense of India in terms of culture, in terms of politics, economic, and all those things. But then in this presentation is confined to culture, how culture and its effect on business in India, and what is the business culture in India and things like that. So there's several lot of interpretation in terms of making sense of India. So we're going to talk about some of these aspects in the coming slides. As you can see that, as I said before, that there's people do have a lot of, people do make sense in several ways about India. I mean, Bollywood curry, so India's official language, yoga, spicy food, and a lot of stereotypes, when you say India, people do relate themselves in terms of these terms and things. I mean, there's nothing wrong about it, yeah, but this is not the only thing that you can know about India. People do relate India actually in several different ways. And one thing that people don't really realize is that India has also, apart from yoga, apart from Bollywood, apart from curry and all these things, India also has a long tradition of doing business, like business history. India is one of the countries that has been doing business all around the world for thousands of years. India has been, has been very active doing business globally, right from the olden days. And also that Indian business, India is also one of the countries that has a, population in a sense that a certain community that are specialized only in doing business. So that's where the caste system applies. For example, that there are in each state of India, there is a community, specific community. Their job or their caste job, whatever you can say, is that doing business. For example, now the present generation will be doing business, and then the father will be doing, has been doing business, and forefather and grandfather. So they have been doing business for generation. So this is one of the things that, that's very, very, very important to understand, so that India has a long tradition of doing business, and people are actually, very smart in doing business and things like that. As you can see that India is actually not going to be a new rich country. India has been a rich country, a few centuries, you could say, as you can see from this, this graph that in the olden days, I think it was only two countries that has been the biggest economic superpower in terms of GDP, with India and China, that has been holding, nearly controlling 50% of the world GDP. And then slowly, slowly that it came down, and then there was an effect of colonialism. The British came, and then the colonialism took over, and then it started going down. And then now it's again growing, growing back. So in a way, I could say India is not actually is a new rich country. India is going back where it has left its legacy. So India is going back to its old position to be back on track, to be one of the largest economies in the world. So this is one example to show that India and Indians have been involved in business for several centuries. And that is again and again that it's keep growing. And so it's India is getting revived to go back to its old position. As you can see from this picture that some of the largest economies in the world, I think USA is still the biggest economy in the world. And then there is China, there is Japan, there is Germany. As you can see, India is like a $1 trillion economy, nearly 3.18% of world GDP is from India. And this figure probably in the next 20, 30 years may change. It can be like India can be in the third or fourth biggest, as I said before. So why I would like to emphasize this is to give an understanding how what kind of opportunities and how things can be really, really huge in terms of business in India. As India is keep growing, as I said before, and as more and more companies, startups and things like that start evolving in India, the economy is going to grow. More and more need and more demands for certain products and services. That's going to keep up India's position very strong. And India's position will be even more, there is a lot of discussion. India should be like a $5 trillion economy in the next few years and a $10 trillion economy. So there is a lot of discussion is going on in India in terms of moving forward. This kind of sounds promising for anybody who want to invest in India. So there is going to be a growth, obvious growth, a natural growth, organic growth, you could say. And that will not be going down. That will be always keeping to grow and grow and grow as due to the population, due to the demand and things like that. So this is to give an overview of economic outlook of India and how big is Indian economy and when compared to world economy and things like that. I could say that as you can see Indian map, we have 29 states and probably 9 union territories. Now after Jammu and Kashmir, has been divided into Ladakh and Jammu and Kashmir, they become union territories. So India is also, very diverse. In terms of India, you could compare Europe. In Europe, there are so many countries with so many different languages, culture, tradition, and things like that. Same applies to India. So India is one of the largest, most diverse country in the world. For example, I come from southern part of India, from the state of Tamil Nadu. For example, if I go from my state to my neighboring state, Kerala or Andhra or Karnataka, I'm new there as well. I'm a foreigner as well because I don't speak their language. I don't know many of their customs and tradition. As you can see that Indian culture is very mixed and diverse, as I said before. So, each state has its own culture, own tradition, own language and things like that. That makes it very exciting in terms of India. And as you can see, it's very hard to term India as one. India is you could say it's a mix of cultures. You could say compare it to melting pot, So, India in terms of culture is very rich and very, very diverse. But at the same time, when it comes to business, then it also should understand how cultures within India can be very different, very vast. For example, what you do in one part of India or one state in India may not necessarily that you can do it in another state. So there is different sensitivities, there are different tradition, different sentiments. So it is very important to understand this internal, divisions in India, how each state differed in terms of culture and what kind of needs in each state. If you look at in Indian states, not all states are probably very advanced. Some states are very advanced in terms of economy, in terms of availability of resources, in terms of infrastructure and everything, and some of the states are picking up. So you need to understand when you're a business person from the West, from abroad, if you want to invest in India, if you want to do business in India, which part of India you want to be in, and which part of India your product or services can have most demand, and where is the focus. So probably that you should start somewhere. Most of the companies, Western companies, or actually based in Mumbai and Delhi, Gurgaon, Bangalore, Pune, Chennai, Hyderabad. So then also there are other parts of India where you can also have your office set up or factory or whatever. So it's very, very important to understand India's internal divisions and the divisions between the states and how that can be that can be useful for your business and how what kind of focus you want to be in terms of India. So as you know, the capital of India is New Delhi. New Delhi is the capital, and then of course you could say the economic capital can be Mumbai. That's where most of the big Indian corporates headquarters are located in. And then there is Bangalore. Bangalore is called as Silicon Valley of India. So that's where most of the IT companies, the Fortune 500 companies, if you take them, most of them are based in Bangalore. And then, for example, Chennai, it's a manufacturing hub for mostly focused on automobile. I could say that each part of India is specialized in some areas. So each state has its for example, special economic zones where certain products or services are more specialized in those special economic zones and things like that. So, and then of course, India is also, has its neighbor, Pakistan, China, Nepal, Myanmar, Bangladesh, Bhutan, Sri Lanka. So we also have the neighboring countries that could also be that's something that companies could think about. If you are in India, you also have an opportunity to go to other countries as well. You can also have your products or services business can be taken to our neighboring countries like Nepal, Bangladesh, or Myanmar, or Sri Lanka. So India is also in terms of market, India is huge. At the same time, it also give access to other markets as well. Some of these products and services that are successful in India can also be successful in other neighboring countries like Nepal, Bhutan, Bangladesh, Myanmar as well. So that makes it India very exciting, and one has to be very sensitive in terms of understanding the local culture, in terms of each state, in terms of religion and things like that. As I have discussed about this geography of India, so this is how I put these divisions. So I kind of divided the states of India into zones: north zone, central zone, northeastern zone, eastern zone, western zone, southern zone. So according to the zones, I have put the states, each of the states were placed in these zones. And then, of course, there are three big ethnic communities in India. I could say, like, mostly that the north, central, eastern, western zone, you could say, as Indo-Aryans. I mean, and in the northeastern zone, you can call them as Mongoloids, and then the southern zone, as Dravidians. But again, it doesn't mean that only these people live in those zones. Of course, India is mixed, so people from any zones live anywhere and all kind of ethnicity. But this is just an overview of how you can classify or divide India in terms of zones and ethnicity and things like that. So, I mean, if you look at in terms of zones, some of these zones are very culturally similar in terms of tradition and customs and things like that. When you compare, like, if you take, like, for example, north, central, eastern, and western zones, probably they may have bit more cultural similarities. Then if you look at the states in southern zones, so I mean, there are a lot of similarities in the culture as well, same with the northeastern zone. So there is a lot of this similarities as well in terms of India. Within India, we do have a lot of similarities. At the same time, we do have a lot of differences as well. So that's very important to understand these geographical divisions and ethnicity in India. Well, I think one of the things to understand is overview of Indian cultural environment. I mean, you can't generalize Indian culture or group as one national culture because it's very complex. India is culturally very pluralistic and it has a very big contradictory orientation. So it's very hard to define or generalize India as one culture. So as I said before, there are a lot of divisions within India. Rather than thinking India as one single culture, it is wiser to think it's an association of various regional and subcultures based on geographical divisions and ethnicity. As we compared before India with Europe, so India is like, I mean, that's why we call it as Indian subcontinent, as we have so much of these divisions. But then again, of course, that Indian cultural environment is also transforming in the recent years, and Indian cultural environment has various contradiction as well. We as Indian, we ourselves have different interpretation of India in terms of our culture, in terms of our language and everything. Even though India is very diverse, one of the most diverse in the world, we are very different in terms of our custom, tradition, religion, whatever. But we as Indian, we all believe in one thing, which is called unity in diversity. It doesn't matter which state in India you are, what language you speak, what kind of ethnicity you are, and what kind of I mean, what kind of customs and traditions you have. But we all believe in one thing, one idea of India, and we are all very proud about our unity in terms of diversity. So this is very important thing when you want to know about India. I mean, the aspect of Indian culture, for example, national, regional, and religious cultures have very strong influence in day-to-day life of people. Which also reflects in terms of business environment. So there is a lot of emphasis on culture, the lot of most part of cultural values and things like that, that is so much intertwined in Indians' life, in the way how we as Indian behave, perform, act, you can put it whatever way. So the culture has a strong influence in our daily life. And of course, as we discussed before, there's a lot of stereotypes about India. But then I don't deny those stereotypes don't exist. Yes, does that exist? At the same time, you have to look India beyond these stereotypes, because if we stick into the stereotypes, sometimes it can be very challenging when you want to do business in India, when you have to deal business, I mean, when you have to deal with Indian people while doing business in India. So it's very important to understand how culture affects Indian business environment, and how you can be cautious when you are dealing with Indian market or with the Indians while doing business in India. Well, I think this is that this I have done for my dissertation. These are some of the factors that are influencing Indian cultural environment. I mean, there are, of course, these are some of the factors. I don't say these are only the factors. There can be many, but I just group them into these categories. I mean, like how the family influence Indian culture in terms of joint family, nuclear family. For example, in the olden days, there used to be joint family system in India where all the siblings and everybody lived together in the same home. We used to have bigger families, larger families. And then the things have changed now, and in terms of now the family size have been reduced. Now it's we talk about nuclear families. And then in terms of education, I mean, there are a lot of different types of education curriculum in India. There is a national curriculum, state curriculum, and international curriculum, and there's a lot of literature, epics, and I mean, how these things affect Indian culture as an India, as a individual Indian. In terms of history, Indian history is very, very vast. It's very huge. I mean, we have a lot of history in terms of how I mean the invasion of Mughals, British rule, and like as a whole India, we do have the Indian history is that as a whole India, we do have not only the Indian history we all study in terms of broader terms like the Mughals and the British rule, but also we do have a lot of regional histories. I mean, like for example, how what is the history in the South India, in the eastern part of India, and so like that, there are a lot of this history also that affects the Indian cultural environment. So India, I could say that it's very mixed, due to this invasion, and things like that, because we have taken some of the cultural things from British, and then some of the things from Mughals, and who are the kings and kingdoms who have conquering India. So Indian history is quite mixed. That's why it makes it very diverse. At the same time, that we also have a lot of influence from the Western, cultural influence, social media, technology, IT, and then movies. How the movies have a very strong influence in Indian culture as well, because you can see that. It's Bollywood, and also like Bollywood. Bollywood is the industry for people who speak Hindi, and then there are also other regional movies as well. So there's a lot of this influence from movies, and then geography, and then religion. I mean, there's India, how the religion affects Indian cultural environment, how the caste system, languages. We have several languages. And then also we do have 22 official languages, and English is it's also widely used, as I said before. A lot of young people nowadays speak English, and people do study in English from their schoolings. I mean, from their schoolings. And then how the traditions like ancient customs, Vedas, and beliefs and rituals and all these things. So I mean, this is a broad term. I mean, how these factors affect an average individual. Average Indian, and then these factors determine the behavioral pattern of Indians, and these factors also affect in terms of business. So one need to understand these are some of the factors that has a strong influence in India, Indian cultural environment, and these Indian cultural environment is also very much determining the Indian business environment. So that's why this is very important thing to understand about these factors that are affecting Indian cultural environment. As I said before, in India, religion is very, very important. Religion play a very central role in culture and society. India is also the home to four biggest religions in the world. It's a birthplace of four religions: Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, and Jainism. And for example, Hinduism and Buddhism are like the third and fourth biggest religions in the world. So it plays a very central role in Indian culture and in society. Religion is always a very important topic. Nearly 80% of the Indians are Hindus, and the Muslims are nearly like 13.4%. I mean, India is the second biggest Muslim populated country in the world after Indonesia. And we do have people from all religions in India. We are a secular country. We are quite open-minded in terms of religion. We do have, religion, even though that we are very diverse in terms of religion and everything, I think still it's not, not an issue in most occasions. We all study together and we do not have any issues in terms of living or working, or having friendship with people from other religions. After all, we are all Indians, and we do have, we do follow different paths. In terms of, for example, Hinduism, that mostly we believe that Hinduism is one way of looking at God, and Islam is one way of looking at God, and Christianity is one way of looking at God. In a sense that there is only one God, people do look through different lenses. That's what most of us, we Indians, believe. And religion plays a central role, as I said. For example, like, even now, whenever there is going to be a new factory in India, even if it's a Western company which is going to start a new company or lay foundation for a new building, still the Hindu rituals are done before starting the project. And also that we are also following, for example, whenever there is going to be a trading, or when you want to do something good in business, you look for auspicious time. And then you I mean this aspect, we strongly believe in astrology. That's very important in sometimes in business as well. When you want to do a new project, when you want to sign a new contract, people still follow this tradition. For example, people look at what is the auspicious time in that particular day, and they want to sign in that particular day and then particular time. Because we believe that when you do things in this auspicious time, then there is going to be a big growth. It's going to be good for the things, good for the future. So that's very important thing in terms of business as well. I mean, I still remember that there are people who are doing, trading, for example, trading shares and things like that, who have invested in stock markets and shares. In Mumbai, it's like the central place for share trading. Like Wall Street is in USA, like that in Mumbai is one place for in India. Which is famous for its training. Most of the banks and investment institutions are located in Mumbai. Still, many of the traders, before they go to trade in the morning, they go to the temple to pray that this day should be good and I should get a positive, positive day. I should get more profit. So people do pray before doing business as well. And also that in terms of in India is also that very important to understand. India also have a different legal status. I mean, if you are a Hindu, you have Hindu Undivided Family Act. So likewise, each religion has a different terms of law. It's a different law as well. So in that way, India is very, very open-minded in terms of a religion. I mean, probably this may not be existing in many countries, but only in India. This is like very, very unique in India that different religion have different kind of laws. And this is one thing also to understand. What applies for a Hindu person may not be the same law may apply for a person from other religion. And that's a thing, that's the way it is in India. As we discussed that, religion affects each and every aspect of Indian behavior, personal life and professional life. This is something that nobody can deny that, because this is just this is somehow directly or indirectly we do many things in India without even realizing that it has a lot of correlation in terms of religion. So, and again, when you look at other religions in India as well, they are not the same way it is followed in other parts of the world, because there's also a lot of interpretation in India. So that's why that the Indian religion makes it very important topic in India while you're doing business in India, and you need to understand the sentiments of each and every religion in India, because sometimes it can be a challenge when you don't know, when you are launching certain products or services. You should also understand the sentiments, because think about it like this: like the population in India, there is like 13.4% of the population of 1.3 billion is Muslims, and if you do a small mistake in terms of launching a product that affects the sentiments of Muslims, imagine you are losing 13.4% of 1.3 billion people as your customers. So that's why it's very important to understand the importance of religion. For example, I can give example of McDonald's. If McDonald's in India don't serve beef or pork, so they have customized their product according to Indian sentiments, as cow is considered to be a holy animal among Hindus, and majority of Indians are Hindus. So McDonald's have decided not to have products. The most unique thing about McDonald's is burgers, which is made up of beef. But you have to change your total portfolio when you have to launch your business in India. So that's how, imagine if it is for a small burger, you have to think your strategy a lot, or you have to change your whole strategy, think about other products. So that's why it's very important that you understand the religious sentiments while doing business in India. At the same time, also that you also have to understand that how you also stay balanced in terms of all religion as well. So you're not only biased towards one religion. At the same time, you shouldn't be biased in terms of one religion. You should be balanced, so you have a product or services that any religious people or people from any religion can actually buy or consume in whatever way. Indian business environment is very hierarchical in nature. I mean, I would say that India is a very hierarchical society. That's how there is a caste system exist and things like that. Of course, people do ask me a lot of times when I do trainings on India, people do ask me the questions about caste system. Yes, caste system still exists in India. It is strong. But then again, it is not in the same form how it used to be before, like probably like 100 years before. It has also changed. India has also evolved, and it is also going towards a newer direction. Most of the young people, probably they are not at all worried about caste and things like that. I still remember in the olden days, how I grew up, people do ask me first when they meet you, they ask you, what is your caste? I mean, probably this like 25 years before, but I don't see this happening at this moment. It has changed. I mean, if you work in private companies, nobody cares about caste, which caste and all these things. But then in terms of hierarchy, that as India is a big country, I mean, there is a lot of I mean, any of this country like India, which is very collectivistic, hierarchy is very obvious. And Indian business environment is very hierarchical in nature. You should really know about this hierarchy. If you don't understand this hierarchical mindset, it could be a very big challenge. Particularly when you're dealing with people, when you're going for negotiation and things like that, you need to understand. But sometimes, because like for a Western person who actually is from a flat hierarchical culture, it can be a big challenge, but then again, it also has its own challenges, each of this thing. In a hierarchical culture, sometimes it's also very, there are a lot of positive things as well, that you can get things done very fast as well, if you understand the nonsenses of hierarchy. I mean, Indian business environment is very competitive, very, very competitive. You need to be very aggressive while doing business in India. If you are actually not very aggressive, it's going to be very, very tough while dealing with India. Why I would say that is that, for example, in Indian business environment, you are not only competing with other Western brands or brands from other countries, you're also dealing with Indian brands. In India, we have companies that are manufacturing pretty much everything. You know, I mean, probably we don't have anything that is equivalent to Airbus or Boeing, probably that may also come in the future years. So we have, if you want a TV, we have an Indian brand. If you want a mobile, we have an Indian brand which is manufacturing. So you name anything, we have cars. We have our own Indian brands that are manufacturing cars. So it's very competitive. And if you in a country like India, if you are not competitive enough, it's very tough to survive. You know, you don't have time to wait. You just have to be instant. You need to be spontaneous in terms of doing things in India. But then again, this competition is that also that it also brings a lot of advantage. You are actually being developing as a company, as an organization, you develop this attitude. It's not only for the companies, even for an individual who want to do business in India, who want to do business with Indian, you need to understand this, because Indians are very competitive in terms of their work, because as we are a nation of 1.3 billion people, there are so many people to do a job. If you are not performing, your performance is not competitive and spontaneous, it can be a challenge, because if you are not there to do this job, there are 100 other people standing outside to take your job. So you have to prove yourself. You have to work hard to prove yourself. You are worth of something. And that's also very important to understand. And you don't have a luxury of taking time. You know, that there is no such thing as like, as a business person, you need to be active 24/7 in India. Because if you're not active, somebody is going to be doing it. And the relationship is very important. You need to build a network. This is the most important thing in terms of India. You need to understand, even you work in the same company, you need to have an internal network. Most of the business in India happens through relationship. You need to know people in places. You know, I mean, within your company as well, you need to have your network. If you don't have this network, in India, it can be a very big problem. I mean, you don't go too far. I mean, I have, you know, met with people who have been doing business with India, who haven't had this network, haven't gone too far. Because if you look at a country like India, you know, people like Indians want to do business with their friends, which means that, you know, in some countries, people want to do business with whom they know better. It doesn't mean if you have the best product and service in the world, you can just like that go and build a business in India without a network. No, it's not the case. If you have the right network, if you have the right partner, it can be so easy to get things done. If you have the best partner, trustworthy partner, then the partner takes care of most of the things in India. And he will take you to places. To build that trust and relationship, it takes time. Trust is not something that is built instantly. It takes a lot of time. And you need to put a lot of effort to show your commitment. And vice versa, in both the sets, I'm not saying only that somebody from Finland should put more effort only. It's also the Indians who have to put more effort to win the trust back. So it works in both the way to building trust and things like that. I mean, like, as I said before, like, you know, you need to think in terms of India. Think locally, not globally. I mean, I would even put it this way. And you may think globally, but act locally. Doesn't mean that you have the best product in the world that it will fit in India. Sometimes that people do have developed, companies have developed products and services for Western world. They imagine that. That you go to a country like India, you can just like that sell and people are going to buy. No, it doesn't work like that. You need to know whether this product or service, whether this product and service can fit into the Indian mindset. Think about like this. You develop a technology for water purification. Okay, you develop a water purification thing in Finland and you want to sell this technology. Most important thing, the water in Finland can be much cleaner. Then you have to treat that water in India. You know, you have to clean the water in the Indian sewages and all, very, very dirty. So then you need to have a technology that should work in India. I mean to say, maybe that your technology that you developed in Finland can be working because the contamination of water level can be very low in Finland. Whereas in India, the contamination can be very high. So you need to understand that your product that has been successful in Finland may not be successful in India. If only your product can be proven that can clean, make a clean water purification in India, then you can consider that your product is can fit into a market like India. I mean, I have seen many times that it's a challenge for many companies that who have who want to standardize their product, and then they just want to sell it or export all around the world. And also one of the things very important is also to understand in terms of cost. Many of the Western products, the products from the Western world that has been developed for the Western mindset, Western salary levels, price point, people can afford countries. But then in terms of India, it's a volume game. You know, you need to understand that not everybody is going to pay like €2,000 for a mobile. So you need to develop a mobile that is for the masses in India. And many companies have done the same way. If you look at, for example, Apple iPhone, I don't see that many people are using Apple iPhone. Maybe the people who can afford Apple iPhone in India, the percentage may be very less. Then you think about this. Then there are people who want to buy Apple iPhone, and people don't have affordability, they can't afford it. So then they are looking for similar products. So do you have a solution for it? So you have to have a product, that can actually, that you can sell it for the masses. For example, if only out of 100% Indian population, 10% can afford Apple iPhone, but then think about the rest. Do you want to sell your product or service only for 10%, or do you want to sell it for 90% of the population? So you need to have that strategy very, very clearly. And when it comes to India, you need to think a lot locally. How you can customize your product and service according to Indian infrastructure, cultural, environment, political, economical, whatever. So you need to understand. Yes, it's always good to have a global mindset, but it doesn't mean that can be very applicable in a country like India. And when you have, when you think locally, you also understand the importance of culture, religion, and values. I mean, Indian consumers are very, very much, they value for money, which means that people do want good products and services, but it doesn't mean that like you can sell for whatever the price, they are very tough negotiators. Indians are very tough in negotiation. Because we as Indians, we grow up in large families. We grow up, through tough times. We have been growing with a lot of siblings and relatives and things like that. So our negotiation practices or our skills starts from early age. You know, that mother send a kid to go to the market to buy vegetable. He go there and he start negotiating like that. You know, like when I was kid, that I go to shop, I go to buy things, I go to market, I go to buy vegetable, fruit. Then I start negotiating. That actually become my practice. So that's what I'm saying. Like it's not easy to sometimes to negotiate with the Indians. So do not underestimate Indians in terms of negotiation. We are very tough in negotiation. It's not that I'm Indian. I'm saying that that's the way it is because we all have this entrepreneurial mindset. Most of us, we Indians, have this entrepreneurial mindset within us. It's also because that, as we are growing in this competitive environment like India, you always have to, move forward. So you have to prove yourself. So we kind of want to stand out from the crowd. So we want to do this kind of attitude. And negotiation is one such skill that we developed, obviously. And Indian workforce is very highly skilled. Most of the Fortune 500 companies and most of the big companies in the world, you will at least see in one Indian there. So even in terms of Finland, you can see, the biggest technology companies, a lot of Indians will be working. All around the world, Indians are working. All around, name any country, there will be Indian who will be working. So we are very highly skilled in terms of work. I mean, like it's because also that India is also one of the biggest IT outsourcing destination. So a lot of companies outsource their projects to India in terms of software, in terms of business process outsourcing and things like that. So most of the jobs that exist in India not necessarily exist outside India. So that's why we have people, we have resources for many professions that probably only exist in India, may not be in other countries. So that's why I would say that we have in India, we have highly skilled workforce and highly educated workforce as well. Well, this is to understand the cultural distance between India and Finland. As you can see, India is a very hierarchical society. The power distance is very high in terms of India when compared to Finland. In terms of individualism, India is not. I mean, Finland is a highly individualistic society, and India is like collectivistic. In terms of the same, in terms of masculinity, India is a highly masculine society when compared to Finland. And Finland is high in uncertainty avoidance when compared to India. In terms of long-term orientation, India is very high. In terms of indulgence with restraint, you can see, Finland is higher, highly intelligent society. I mean, in terms of power distance, you know, as I said before, we have been discussing that the hierarchical society in India, that's always a role, you know. The boss is always the boss, you know. You can't contradict, you can't challenge your boss like in the Western world. You need to understand this hierarchy, you need to understand. I mean, in Finland, it's very obvious. A boss is considered to be more of a colleague, you know, but in India, it's more like a paternalistic father. Of course, things have changed now. Things have changed a lot after the Western multinationals started working with India, but still mostly the workplaces in India are very hierarchical. You need to understand, if you want to get things done, you always need to know, you know, whom to deal with. You can't just like that go and start dealing with anybody. You need to understand that person whom you deal may not necessarily have a power to make decision. He or she should be actually going to his or her boss to get things done. So they may not be the one who is going to give you the solution right away. And collectivistic culture like India, it's very important that we are always thinking about the society, as we are so much caring about the society. We always think what other people say. So collective achievement is considered to be very important, and that's why that many times the team works in India. Like, I think about like this, for example, you work in a team in India. In Finland, there is a team, each person has a role, and then each person agree on a date. And so each person do their duty, and then on that particular date, they come and compile it together, and then work is done. But it may not be the same scenario in India. And you know, there is a team leader, and then the team leader allocates the work, and then, you know, there is a lot of difference in terms of how actually the role, team role, is played in India and in Finland. So you need to also understand when you deal with it. Well, India is a highly masculine society. You know, men are more powerful than women. That's the term it is. But it's, I don't say that men are more powerful than women, but that's the way the society, that's the term for, you can use it for this masculine society. Men are considered to be, perceived to be, having a bigger role. There's a clear role between men and women in these societies. So men is always that person who takes care of the work, and then who brings money for the family and everything. And women is a person who is taking care of the family and things like that. So there is a clear role between men and women in terms of this highly masculine society. But then this is also changing. This has changed a lot in the recent years. If you look at many of the big corporates in India, most of the big positions are held by a female person in India. There are so many very, very highly successful business leaders who are female, you know, who are women, who are done extraordinary achievements. So it's also changing, even though still Indian society is considered to be masculine. Things have moved a lot, moved forward, and things have changed a lot. And so that is to put it shortly. And so this is just to give an idea that there is no similarity between India and Finland in terms of you know, these dimensions. So, I mean, there's a big cultural distance between India and Finland. But then again, sometime when you have a large differences, when there is a huge differences in terms of culture, this can also be an advantage while doing business with India, while dealing with Indians. So I see one of the positive things about this cultural distance, and sometimes the differences makes us also, you know, similar sometimes, in a sense that the differences can also be an excellent thing to get to know each other and to work together. And so this is very, very important thing to understand, these differences in terms of cultural distance. As you can see, the comparison I just put through this through the Hofstede's dimension, like the earlier slide. So this is to give you a you know, brief overview in terms of ranking where India and Finland stands in terms of power distance, in terms of individualism, vis collectivism, masculinity, vis femininity, uncertainty, avoidance, and long-term and short-term orientation, and indulgence and vis restraint. So this is to give you a overview in terms of Hofstede's dimension. Well, it's very important to understand English-speaking Indians not necessarily think like Westerners. And why I emphasize that when, for even though we as Indians, we do speak really good English due to our you know, history, as we have been ruled by the British, so we naturally got English as you know, one of the language that we all using it on everyday business environment, everything. But then again, when you're not a native English speaker, you need to understand the interpretation of English can be different. For example, in this picture, you can say, you know, a real English person would be saying, like, would you please be so kind as to point me in the direction of the premises where I will find some relief. So then it's very hard for many person to understand what a real person will speak. Then you also say, like, okay, you know, in a normal person from anywhere in the world, where is a toilet or toilet, please? So why I put this picture to one is to show you that you may think that, okay, sometimes that people do think, okay, this Indian guy I met in the business meeting, he speaks excellent English. So probably he understand our mindset and everything. It not necessarily, because see, most of we Indians have these language skills as we study in English and everything, and we do watch a lot of Hollywood movies and things like that. So our interpretation of the Western world, or imagination of the Western world, comes from the movies and Hollywood movies and things like that. So it doesn't mean that we have so much understanding about the Western culture and Western world. It takes time to make people understand. Finland is different from America. Finland is different from Sweden. UK is different from France. So that's very important that you also talk about your culture, how you are different in terms of other countries. And it's very important also as a Finnish person that you actually put a lot of effort on also showing your own cultural values, or talk about your own cultural values to the Indians, so that they understand Finland is very different from the rest of the world or other countries. So you have to be very careful. And sometimes that, you know, when an Indian speak English, he also speak English based on his own language as well. So same with the Finns, same with the French, whomever, who is not a native English speaker. And we do Indians, like, you know, sometimes we are so, you know, shy, or we don't say no. You know, sometimes we consider that saying no can be not polite. So we do say a no in 100 different ways. You know, and in a business situation, sometimes this can be a very big challenge. in terms of negotiation and things like that. So you need to understand if a person is not saying no, it doesn't mean that it is taken for granted or it is okay. No, you need to understand what is the reason behind why he doesn't say it. And it's okay in many of the Western world to be direct in your communication. You can just say straight away. But in India, you need to be very careful with the words you use. At the same time, you need to be careful in understanding the words you actually get from Indians. As I said before, communication is the biggest difference as well as challenge in India. And India is a country where, you know, the people like to articulate things. If you look at the email sometimes that, you know, people do write a long email, probably like two paragraphs, three paragraphs, and then you get a response from a Finnish person. Okay, thank you, in short, you know. So nothing wrong, there is no comparison. Both things, there is no right or wrong. You know, that's the way people are. We as Indians, we want to communicate things in with a lot of words. You know, we want to have more like a lot of stories. We want to say stories, and we want to put things, everything in detail, and we want to explain everything in detail. But then when you compare countries like Finland, where people want to communicate in a shorter, you know, in a shorter form, and sometimes there is a problem. So people do get confused in understanding each other. And this is a very big problem in business as well, that you could see, for example, when there is a sales pitch, somebody is from India, if some person is selling you something, then this person is putting a lot of effort to explain each and everything, detailed presentation and everything. And then this is not the same thing when a Finnish person does. So whenever you're going for a presentation of your products and services in India, you need to have this approach. You need to make, you need to communicate, extensively, so that people do understand your product or service, what are the benefits and everything. It's also very important that in terms of when meeting Indians and everything, this small talk is very important. Think about the scenario when there is a business meeting in Finland. Well, probably we talk about weather, probably 1 minute to 2 minutes, and then we start, as we get back to business, we start talking about contracts or whatever. But in Indian scenario, it may not be the same. People are so excited to know about your life. People may ask you a lot of personal questions, and people will be asking that question that you may not want to answer. So you need to understand, it isn't a normal thing in India. People just are curious. They want to know who are you and what are you doing, what kind of person you are. Do you have a family? Do you have a wife, kid? This may be taboo in Finland, but this is very normal. And you really need to have a lot of patience, and you need to have this, this skill to be communicating, very well. You need to get people excited, and most of the time in a business situation in India, this personal chemistry is very important. People do have a lot of discussions and things like that. Sometimes you need to also understand that it's not that you go for a one day business trip to India and you imagine that you can get things done within a day. It may not work. You need to reserve extra 1 or 2 days. You never know that in India, anything situation can change immediately. You may end up meeting one customer, and then there may be a lead for another customer for a next day appointment. So there can be a lot of things that can happen. So you need to have that patience. At the same time, you need to have this extra time as well while you are traveling to India. And communication is a very, very key thing. And particularly when you are not an English speaker, you also understand. Most of the time, the challenge happens in communication because that as an Indian, he doesn't want to, contradict you, or, he want to please you. He may agree on the dates. Okay, we will get it done this week, this day, blah, blah, blah. And then you come back to Finland, and then you wonder on that particular date, nothing happens, you know. It's again, there is a challenge, because sometimes that people do not want to say that they do not have answer now, so they want to consult with their superior and things like that. So that those things are very obvious in India. And so once you get this friendship, even for example, even if you work in the same company, you work in X company in Finland and the same company have a subsidiary in India, it doesn't mean that the practices and culture are same. No, it's totally different. The Indian company is a Finnish company located in India, maybe a subsidiary, but it doesn't mean it works in Finnish way. It can be totally different. I'm sure that it will be totally different when you compare how the same company works in Finland and India. And so it's very important to understand this communication aspect. And so you need to have this network building and then this friendship building within the company as well. Well, I mean, management style, the Indian management style, micromanagement is very common in India. Most of the time, this can be also a challenge for many people from Finland. But because in Finland, that whenever there is a task is given to your subordinate, then you give them a deadline and you don't have to follow up. You consider it to be done. You know, it will be done automatically. But in India, you have to follow. You have to micromanage things. You have to micromanage people. That's the way it is, you know. Like, for example, I mean, I have been doing interviews with some of the business leaders in Finland. And one of the person told me that in Finland, planning and implementation commitment, that's kind of a given. You plan your day, you plan your week, and you have a meeting with your colleagues and your staff, and then it's, you don't need to. Our culture is not following up and asking, so what did you do today? Did you do what we agreed? But I think in India, it's more based on continuous following up. Yeah, I mean, that's why I said it's like, you know, micromanagement is very, very common in India. That's the way the system works. So you have to understand that whenever you have an Indian as your subordinate or you have Indians working, you need to have this follow-up. I mean, most of the time what happens is that you give a task to an Indian person and you expect that this person will be finishing it up on a particular date. And then you go to this person on that particular date and asking him, like, have you done it? He may say that, oh, I haven't done it because I thought it is not important. Since you, I mean, as you haven't asked me in the middle, I thought, okay, it's not important, so I haven't done it. You can expect these kind of answers, then you really get annoyed, you know. I mean, because you didn't understand that you have to follow up this person, he or she, continuously. So then this person didn't take it as serious matter. So in Finland, I mean, if you do like that, it can be like a, you know, breach of trust. People can think that you are not trusting this person. But it doesn't work in this way in India. You need to have this constant following up with this person, whoever it may be. And this micromanagement is the style that, you know, most of the Indians will be doing it in India. And of course, I mean, when you look at in terms of, you know, in the companies in India, that nowadays the practices are also so much changing, as there are a lot of Western companies who have started practicing a lot of practices from the West, that Indian workplaces are also becoming very mixed in terms of their culture. There are a lot of practices that are very much, you know, like a fusion, you know, that you mix kind of Indian and Western style of management. But at the same time, this also is also sometimes can be backfiring, because you can't completely change the attitude and culture of the people. You know, you need to understand how that particular system works in India. Sometimes it can also be a challenge. So you need to understand this these little differences while you are managing people in India. And the management style can be that Indian. I mean, of course, it's also very like individual, you know, what kind of approach you want to have, what kind of leadership style you have and things like that. But you should be very much, you know, cautious about this micromanagement. And this is something that could be very helpful, and this works best in India, micromanagement. Yes, of course, in India we do have a lot of autonomy as well, as an individual who works in a company, but then there is a lot of boundaries in that autonomy as well. It's not that you can do whatever you want. You still are answerable, you still have to follow the hierarchy, and you still have to follow the rules and regulations of your boss and things like that. But then then there is a limitation also. Even though it looked like there's an independence, and many times that what happened is that that people from countries like Finland, when they go to India, they wonder, they meet, end up meeting with people who are in the same level. I mean, like they may be in the same hierarchical level in Finland, but the interpretation or the powers to make decisions can may not be the same. The person in Finland with the same hierarchical title or same title may have much more power than the person who is in India with the same title. So you also need to understand this. This is also a very crucial thing. Well, I mean, in India, the boss is a real boss. I mean, the leadership style, as I said, it's more like a paternalistic father, and people expect to be you need to be a strong leader. I mean, you can't really start having the flat hierarchical or flat way of hierarchy in Indian workplaces. This can backfire too. If you are not a strong leader, you may not consider to be a leader at all sometimes. I mean, when I spoke with one of the Finnish business leaders, this is what I mean, he was saying. We don't want to be bossy, so we want to more have a buddy culture. So we are more buddies than you would be my boss. But in India, I've been told and I have understood that in a way, when people can position themselves somewhere in the hierarchy, then they feel safe, which is true. I mean, like, you can't have the buddy culture in India. Most of the time, this can be a negative thing as well. Because you always want to maintain a distance between yourself and your subordinates, and you mean once you have this kind of buddy culture, this can be also the people may not even take you serious. Then people can also take advantage over you. So that's why that you need to maintain that distance whenever you are having this, working with the Indians. This also applies. I mean, many times. People from abroad as well, they kind of expect, they want to have that buddy culture because they are never used to have to be bossy on somebody. They never have faced this challenge of showing their power and things like that. But then when it comes to India, if you don't show, things don't work, and then it is a challenge. And many Indian workplaces nowadays have been changing. There's a lot of they're also trying to bring this kind of buddy culture in some of these companies. I mean, in the olden days, that people used to always call by certain titles like sir, doctor, or mister, or whatever like this. But then a lot of Western companies, particularly the American companies, when they started coming to India, then they started having this that you can call by first name, people by first name and things like that. I mean, that may be for the beginning, and then when you start working. In India, then this can be very different. I mean, I have been working with a few companies in India. I still remember it was my first job. We were like some five, six people. We were on a induction in that first company which I worked for. And so me and my colleagues, we were sitting in front of our boss on the first ever induction. This is what he said. If you want to work in this company, you want to follow two rules. We were so curious, what kind of rules you have after all this. And then this boss said, the first rule, the boss is always right. You know what he said, the second rule, follow the first rule. So this is just to give an example, how hierarchical can be the Indian work environment. I mean, sometimes it can be also considered to be negative when people go from flat hierarchical societies, but then it also has an advantage in that style as well, in that leadership style as well as in flat hierarchical style as well. But most of the Indians, we Indians, we want to have a leader who is very strong, very charismatic, and very. Sometimes, people think that when you have a strong leader, then things go in a very disciplined way, and there is certain kind of strictness due to that, the system starts working. So we kind of have this perception towards leadership. As we have grown up seeing a lot of strong leaders in our history and culture and things like that, then that also has been so much reflecting in your mind. That's what I was saying when I show these slides, what kind of factor that it has that is influencing Indian cultural environment. This is also one of the factors that you could say you know, that the leadership is also strongly influenced by our culture, you know, I mean, our history and things like that. And that is also reflected in the workplaces. But then again, nowadays, it is the era of startups in India, and the startups are more like a flat in hierarchy. I mean, in the Indian way, not really. You can't compare how it's done in Western world. So there's a lot of changes that's happening in corporate style. But then when you have to go to public institution in India, when you want to get things done in India, when you go to government office and everything, you really need to understand that is the hierarchy is very strong out there. So you can't just like that go and call somebody by their first name. You know, he or she may be very lower in position or maybe lower in terms of, you know, power, but you still, you know, it's better to be always careful when you deal with these people. And because the most of the government institution, they're not so much exposed to Western world or Western lifestyle and things like that. So it still operates in a very Indian way. And that's where that the hierarchy is even more stronger than when you compare with many of the companies, the private companies or corporates. So the leadership is something that in India is also that whenever there is like in country like India, when you have a boss, you consider to me, consider he or she as your mentor. Most of the time, whenever there is a situation in a company or in the meetings, you know, I mean, you don't just like that give your opinion. Maybe it's very common in the Western world. You can contradict your boss. You can challenge. You can tell your opinions openly. You have to be very careful when you do in India, because in India sometimes that doesn't work. That doesn't do well. Of course, you don't challenge your boss. Sometimes it can be a very, very big issue. So I still have friends who are working in Indian companies who are living in India and working. And some of them even work for the Western companies, Western subsidiaries. Whenever I interact with them, I'm surprised that, I kind of assume, okay, India has changed a lot in terms of practices, in terms of corporates and things like that. But then when you look in depth, you know, it's not the same. But there's also a lot of improvement. I mean, of course, then again, you can't really expect that every country in the world should be like Finland or every country in the world should be like USA. No, you can't be. So that's the way it is. And you can't change everybody. You just have to accept and you should know how to adjust in that particular environment. So it's very important as a leader. And also, you know, I actually met with an Indian, I mean, I met with a Finnish businessman who have a subsidiary in India. So we have been having a discussion with this person. He was saying that once he was in India, he was meeting with his employees in India. They are probably like some 100 employees there. He was making joke. He thought it was a joke. And everybody was so serious. Nobody was laughing. People were so much paying attention. He was expecting that. He was making a joke. I mean, because he's a CEO of the company, he expected that like people are going to laugh and things like that. So he just wanted to make the situation very easy and make people comfortable and everything. Then later he realized that as he is the CEO of the company, everybody started being very serious to each and every one, and nobody was laughing. They just were very polite. And then he said to me, and then I understood how it is, you know, how different it is in India when compared to Finland. So he said that after that, I'm very careful when making jokes. This was like this person was saying. So the leadership is something that's very, you know, like a very important topic, not only in India, in any country in the world, but in India, it's even more to understand this very much. This is a comparison of preferred leadership styles in India and Finland. If you look at this leadership style, this I took from the Globe study. I mean, and there are like six leadership styles: charismatic, value-based, team-oriented, participative style, human-oriented style, autonomous style, self-protective style. So if you look at the differences, I mean, Finland and India, the point difference is very less. India is like 5.85 and Finland is slightly higher, 5.94. So I mean, you could say that both the countries value charismatic leadership and value-based, but then again, the interpretation of charisma and value can be quite different in both the countries. The same with the team-oriented styles. Both the countries, I think, prefer this because the difference is very slightly. But then when you compare the participative style in Finland, it's much higher when compared with India. And the human-oriented style, I think it's more higher in India than in Finland. And the autonomous style, I mean, both the countries prefer, but there is a slight differences. Then when you compare the self-protective style, India is very high. It's 3.77 when you compare with Finland. I mean, many things. I mean, in terms of leadership style, both the countries have certain similarities. You could say slight similarities, also big differences. But you need to understand what kind of leadership style you, as an individual, want to exhibit when you are dealing with people in India, or when you deal with with your employees and things like that. So you need to understand the leadership style. Sometimes it can be even combination of two or three styles, or who knows, like it's like an individual style. So just to give an broader perspective, what kind of leadership style both the countries, people in both the countries are expecting or using it. As I said before, a relationship matters. It's a key thing in India. And I mean, when I spoke with one Finnish business person, this is what he said, like, in personal relationship in India, in Finland, not so much. And in Indian context, a personal presence and commitment is absolutely vital. Otherwise, you cannot do business. I agree with this person, with this Finnish business leader, whom I still remember. We have been very much discussing about it as well. You see, like in Finland, if you have a product or a service, so you want to get a client, for example, you can just call this company, you can fix up a meeting, you tell this client, like he or she, that you are coming at this particular time, you want to give a presentation, you want to sell or whatever. I mean, it's very easy to approach. But in India, you always have to go through a proper channel. You need to always find some connection. I mean, I don't say that it may not work if you do like in Finnish way, but the chances are very limited. But then when you have a certain network, and through the network you go, the attention is more. I still remember that when I used to work as a HR consultant, whenever we want to have, I mean, whenever I go to meet a new client, I always look for a reference. So I try to see if there is somebody between me and client, who are common, both of us. And then I ask this common person to give an introduction about me and my company, and then things go very easily. It's because you already have a reference that somebody have referred you. So then this person kind of trust, and then it goes. And particularly when you are actually doing bigger projects in India, and particularly when you want to do government projects and things like that, this is even more important, this personal relationship. We do spend a lot of time investing, particularly when you are actually going from Finland to India on a business meeting. Sometimes what happen is that you end up spending a lot of time hanging out with people. You may not even talk any business. You just eat with them, drink with them, you mingle with them, you go whatever, like, occasion you go for, some function or festival, whatever. I mean, this is one way of building your relationship. And if you have a chance to go to weddings in India, if one of your partner or friends invite you in India to invite you for a wedding, don't miss it, because our weddings are very big, really big, and you can see, I mean, a lot of relatives, a lot of friends. We call everybody for a wedding. Some of the weddings have been like, one of my relatives' daughter got married like a few years ago. 6,000 people in the wedding. I mean, I'm not lying, I'm not exaggerating. This is normal in India. Even a small wedding, there'll be like some 1,000 people in India. And in India, these are the ways that you can expand your network. So you will be sometimes You expect the unexpected. In unexpected places, you may end up meeting with people who can be very helpful in helping you in business. As we have this lot of friends and family, that again, that's all become part of our network. You know, that's also one of the things that we as Indians, we succeed many times in business. So I would say that you invest more time with Indians, and that's an excellent thing. That's never a waste of time. And it's also the other way. Whenever you're hosting a client or a potential partner from India, you do spend time with this person, not just put them in hotel and take them to business venues. No, that's not what I meant. You spend more time with them, take them out, and take them to interesting places that you can show to them, share more about the culture, Finnish culture, and create curiosity. Once this connection become much more stronger, this chemistry between you and your partner becomes stronger, things goes faster, then you kind of bring and build this trust. And this is one of the most important thing I would always emphasize. Relationship matters in India, and you need to spend a good amount of time in building relationship and trust in India. It can do wonders. You can be very successful, and you can achieve extraordinary things through the good network and good friends in India. So that's one of the things that I would like to emphasize in terms of work culture in India. I mean, like, you know, in terms of decision making, this is something that very crucial that one has to understand. I think I already have explained a little bit in terms of this as well. Like, for example, Finnish freedom, Indian dependence. I mean, this was like one of the business leaders in Finland who said to me that the biggest difference is, of course, in that we have quite much freedom to decide ourselves, and we don't need to discuss with our managers. We don't need to go and ask for every single decision. We make the decision. Well, you see that, as I said before, you really need to do stakeholder analysis. So whenever you're going to meet a potential client or customer or a partner in India, you need to find out if this person is the real decision maker. In Finland, even a person with who is lower level in hierarchy can make a decision independently without consulting his or her superiors. But in India, it's always that even you can meet a person with the title vice president, it doesn't mean that he have the right to decide everything on his own. Probably he have to go and consult with his superior, and his superior have to consult with his superior. So that's where the hierarchy comes, you know. So sometimes what happens in business is that people end up meeting wrong people who don't have powers to make decision. I mean, like, you may think that, okay, I met with the vice president of this company in India, so our deal is done, so we are going to sign a contract. If you think like that, sometime it can, I mean, it may not happen, and don't be surprised, because this person will not tell you that he or she don't have a power to make decision. They don't want to lose their face in front of you. Know, they may be polite by not saying it, but then the real truth is that they have to consult with their bosses. You know, so the decision making is like always that in Indian sometimes that they have to depend on. So whenever you have this occasion, that you actually also have to think that who is the real person, who is the real boss with whom I should deal directly. And one of the challenges that also happens that most of the time that I've been working with some of the companies in Finland, they have a subsidiary in India. Sometimes that what happens is that you want to get something done in India and you end up contacting the wrong people within the same organization. Even though you work for the same X company in Finland and India and you have a title like project manager, and then you happen to get things done through a project manager in India, you contact him directly to get things done, then you have to be also understand sometimes it may not happen immediately. It's better always that you see who is the person, you know, who is above this project manager in India. You contact his or her superior, then you interact with them, you want to get things done, then it can go very smoothly. Sometimes, you know, that people don't understand that, you know, that even though you work for the same organization, but then there is a lot of these issues as well. You know, who holds the power? Then there can be also these ego issues can come in India as well. It can happen anywhere. I mean, I'm just saying in this context in India, the superior can also be thinking, oh, how dare this person from Finland, he called to my superior without my permission and he's asking me to do this. Sometimes this may not even work, you know, that person may not even, the person who agreed to do certain task with you may not even be doing. So that's always very important to understand who is the real decision maker. You go through this person. You know, it's not that everybody is independent in India. I mean, yeah, they are independent in their own way, but it is not the same freedom that they have in Finland. So that's why that you need to understand the real decision maker. And that sometimes it's difficult that, you know, people have to ask for each and every decision to their, you know, their subordinates, I mean, sorry, into their bosses. Because you see that people are also, I mean, in a hierarchical societies like India, there is always the people who have the most power, you know, they have the big control. And that's the way that people want to run the companies and organization. And so the who holds the majority of power, who want to, you know, who want to take each and every decision. Because if something goes wrong without this person's approval, there can be a challenge for him. I mean, in a sense that it can be, you know, if something goes wrong, this person is accountable. You know, you also have to think it other way. Sometimes we may think hierarchy is bad, from a Finnish point of view, but then you also have to think sometime that, so why that hierarchy is very important in that particular country context or in that particular company context. You know, people are very accountable as well, so they want to have a control over it so that they do not want anything to go wrong. So that's why I was saying, I put this slide as Finnish freedom is Indian independence. So you need to understand who is the real decision maker. And the decision making sometimes that also that in terms of the same company, there can be quite contradictory decisions. So the decision making can be very quick in headquarters. It can be very slow in Indian in a subsidiary and vice versa. So it is because of this this kind of freedom, you know, what level of freedom each country, each subsidiary, you know, has and things like that. So you need to understand the real decision maker. Well, the concept of time, sometimes that, I mean, I meet with a lot of Finnish business people who work with India. This is one of the challenges they have in dealing with India. So this is a picture done by one of the, you know, one of the artists, Yang Liu. She was comparing you know, China with the Western world. This can also be applicable to India as well. I mean, I just put this as a representation. The red one is you know, in China, and then the blue one is the Western world. That's what the picture I saw. I thought that it would be exciting as well to use it in this. I mean, when we were talking about concept of time, in like, you know, I have been having an interview with the Finnish business leader. This is what he said, like, you know, with the Finns, basically, you never really need to doubt. I mean, what you see is what you get in a way. I mean, we are very straightforward, unfortunately, many times too open and too honest in a way. But, you know, it's very, you can trust on that. If we say you will get it by noon on Wednesday, we stop the traffic, we don't sleep, we don't eat, and you get it by Wednesday noon. I mean, this is what this person said. I mean, I have been meeting with this business leader, and then he has been having a challenge. And what happened is that that they have been having a delegate. They have been delegating some of the tasks to their Indian colleagues, and they have been agreeing on a time. And then you know, the work has been completed, and these people start wondering what happened, why I haven't got that done. And then later they realized that, you know, that the cultural aspect of it, as we discussed earlier as well in earlier slides, I've been telling you about this. You need to really micromanage the people. You need to, you know, split days, you know, with minutes, hours, whatever, and then you you kind of follow constantly. That's very important. And of course, in India also, you need to have a lot of patience. Patience is very important. Sometimes that things may not be working the way how you want in the time you want. And it's always good that whenever you agree on a deadline, you have to be very smart about it. Okay, you have a real deadline in your mind. For example, if it is the real deadline is January 30, is the real deadline, you should give the deadline to Indians as January 15th. Then you have like 2 weeks extra, you know, like 15 days extra in case if it is not done by January 15, you still have some grace day so you can get it done. So you have to be very, very smart in handling time, and you need to communicate. And most of the time, you know, if you think that you can do business only with email, that may not be the best possible thing. You need to communicate. You need to speak with people about the deadlines and how serious it is. And you can always agree also on the priorities. And of course, this challenge can also be sometimes with the Indians also that face challenge with Finns. Because in India, the concept is that that the time you are in cultures like India, time is not money yet. But then in many, most of the countries in the Western world, time is money, you know, so you have to use it wisely. And so people do have this, you know, work-life balance and things like that. In India, most of the time that we are always open for work. That's the way the environment. And even sometimes on Sunday, you have to be, you know, keep your mobile working. I still remember when I was working like 15 years back, you know, my company gives me mobile and they pay me for my mobile bills and everything. The company, my boss was saying that my mobile should be always active. Whenever he want, he would like to call me, I should be approachable. And I mean, sometimes, you know, I work in HR consulting, I mean, recruitment consulting. We used to put a lot of posting in the portals, in the job portals, and candidates do call me. Sometimes they call me even on Sundays, you know, they call me on Sundays or Saturday evenings and things like that. But I have to, you know, I can't shut my mobile. That's why I'm being paid for. But then when for Indians, that's quite normal that people are like this. People do spend a lot of time with their colleagues and people do spend a lot of time with their work environment. They do stay long hours in office. But then when it comes to Finland, that people, like, you know, when it's a holiday, it's a holiday. When it's a holiday, if the worker is working, then you have to pay them double salary and things like that. So it's okay that if you don't answer your mobile calls or emails in the weekends, it's acceptable in Finland. Sometimes it can be a challenge in India, because, for example, in summertime, it's a 1 month vacation in Finland, but Indians are still working. And then they wonder that why I'm working in summer here and then people have holidays there, why I'm not getting them. You know, so this is also also perceived, you know, sometimes in the Indian side. And this is some of the challenges that are faced by Finnish companies while working with India and Indians. And I have been working with some Finnish companies who have subsidiaries in India. And then this was some of the things that they have been always emphasizing, that the Indians get annoyed when we don't answer our phones or send an immediate reply and things like that, and vice versa as well. And then I say that, like, in India, you know, you have to work. If you don't work, you don't have food to eat. You know, there is no benefits like in Finland. You know, in Finland, there is Kela, whatever the benefits you have, the social security and everything. In India, it may not be the same. You really have to work. The job security is very less in India when compared to Finland. So you have to prove yourself. So you are not counting your time. You just have to do it. I mean, you can't say that it's like 6 o'clock. I have to go and pick my kids and things like that. It may be very unusual somebody say it, because I mean, the environment is quite competitive. We can't also blame with the companies in India, because if they are not, if they are counting their time, if they are not available, accessible to their clients 24/7, they may lose business as well. Because if you are not following it, if you're not flexible, there are other companies who may take your place. You need to have that flexibility in Indian business environment. That's why that companies are also very flexible. Sometimes you even have 24/7 customer service. And some of the businesses, they should be like that. They should work in such a way. And so the concept of time, you need to understand, it's very important in India. And you need to always be wise about making decision in terms of deadline, and so that you can avoid a lot of issues while dealing with Indians. Well, I think as we discussed about leadership before, we also want to show this picture. I mean, like this one Finnish business leader said that in India, the biggest difference is the boss is a real boss. So everybody listen to what boss is, which is true, as I said before. The boss is the real boss, and you do have to listen to him. You are expected to listen to him, and you are kind of following the orders and things like that. But then, of course, it's again, it depends on each individual company, and the boss is also that you are also thinking your boss is somebody who will take care of you, who as a person with power, who will be taking care of you. Even sometimes what happens that in some companies, people even go and get advice from their boss on their personal issues. And also in India, in Indian leaders, that Indian business leader, if you look at the biggest companies in the world now, like for example Google, and then in Microsoft, the CEOs are Indians. Like there are many companies. Earlier, the CEO of Pepsi was Indian. Her name is Indranui. And then of course the CEO of Nokia is also Indian. So like that many of the big corporates are having also Indian CEOs. It's also one reason is that we in India, we grew up in such a competitive and volatile environment. We kind of having that drive, that zeal. We want to achieve things because our families are bigger. We want to prove that we have a rich, affluent lifestyle. We are very comfortable in terms of living, in terms of money and everything. So we kind of want to show that to our families and societies. So we have to work hard to prove to ourselves, to prove to our relatives and everything that we are very successful. And as this kind of, we grow up in this kind of thought process, and we also grow up, even if you study in school, there's always competition between the kids, who is getting the first rank in the school, in the classroom, in exams and things like that. So we have to work very, very hard. And that hard work, when we go abroad, when we work in any environment, we also apply that because we need to prove ourselves, So then we work in such harsh condition that become our spirit, it's also our skill we develop, competitive skill we develop. So we are kind of always aiming to grow higher. It's very common in Indian when there is an interview, sometimes that when you are interviewing a person, it's very normal the person is asking like, when can I expect promotion? Mean like in how many years it will take me to move to a higher role? I mean you are interviewing him for one role, and then the person is asking, what is my next position? Which means, when will I have a promotion? What will I be promoted after this position? And it's like that is a very common. This may not be the same in Finland. You may not be asking these questions in Finland. It can be a very big attitude issue in many countries outside India. But in India, that we always want to grow higher and higher. So we kind of expect that, okay, in this particular age that I want to be a CEO, I want to be a vice president or whatever. You always have a target, to grow as a leader and to achieve higher position in a corporate environment. So you really have to develop those skills and things like that. That's why that you are always, develop this leadership skill also. Sometimes I have been meeting with some of the business leaders in India, and I used to wonder, I used to think and compare with similar kind of people, similar kind of business people in Finland, and how they are different in terms of exhibiting their leadership style and things like that. And I see there are many things they also have similarities, in terms of business leaders in Finland and India, yet they're also shown in a different way, so then, of course, sometimes it's very easy to approach a Finnish business leader because the hierarchy is very narrow. when compared with the Indian, because the hierarchy is broader in India due to the leadership style. So I used to compare and see how this thing is different. Then I try to compare and see whether this is good or bad, and then I come up to a conclusion. Yeah, I mean, in Finnish environment, that's the right thing to do, and Indian environment, that's the right thing to do. But then I also think, what if this person tried me, if these people reverse the role? What if a Finnish person is exhibiting an Indian leadership style, and if an Indian person is exhibiting a Finnish leadership style? And then I try to think what kind of situation it can cause. I come to a conclusion that it doesn't work, because imagine you as an Indian business leader, you are coming to Finland, you want to have similar kind of micromanagement kind of leadership style. Do you think people are going to like it in Finland? No, they're not going to like it. They may consider that this person is not trusting me, and this is not the way that I want to be treated. Many people may even leave the job, you know. Same in India, you know, like, I mean, it, of course, in India, it can have even success more than in Finland. But you also have to be cautious as a leader. You know, what kind of leadership style you can exhibit in India. So this is to give an overview. You know, the leadership is very, very important in India, and you really have to project yourself as a strong leader who have the power. At the same time, of course, I wouldn't recommend that you are being very authoritarian. Sometimes it can backfire, but you have to have the limit. You know, you need to know the limit, where and what situation you can exhibit what kind of style and things like that. So leadership is one of the important things that you have to think about when you're dealing business with India and with Indians. Well, rules do not operate in India the same way as the West. I mean, this is very important thing to understand. You may think that, of course, there are universal values everywhere and things like that, but then there's a different interpretation in each country. And this is like, you know, this one funny cartoon. I mean, this guy is calling to his boss. Good afternoon, sir. Horrible traffic jam, sir. I'll be coming a bit late for the meeting, sir. This is what this subordinate say, and call his boss and say, we are waiting for you. Make it fast. So you could see that, you know, like you still want to show that, you know, you are... Of course, this is also one way to do with leadership style as well and things like that. Just to give a funny cartoon, just to have a thinking that you can think about such situations. That, you know, you also have to be careful. I mean, of course, sometimes that, you know, like people, when I compare India and Finland, what happens that sometimes I still remember it was like back in 2007. I was in a pub in Vaasa at the time of studying, and it was, I think, May 30 or 31st. The next day is June 1st. So it was on a day that from June 1st, 2007, there is a law coming in Finland. You know, like nobody can smoke inside the bars or cafes and restaurants. So me and my Indian friend, we were in that, happened to be in that pub on that day night. So at 12 o'clock, we were so shocked. You know what happened? At 12 o'clock, not even a single Finnish person was smoking inside that pub. We were like, wow, how come people are so much, you know, aware, and how people are disciplined. And we were so shocked and surprised, and we're very... and happy to see and glad to see how much people follow the rules. But this may not be the case in India if there was a similar situation. Why I gave this example is sometimes that, you know, in some cultures, people may break the rules. That's also one form, you know, people, yeah. You need to understand that not all the time rules will be understood or followed in the same way that has been formed. People do have different interpretations of rules. So this is one example to understand. It doesn't operate the same in India like in the West. Indians do not work, I mean, do not view work and life same as friends. This is a picture for thinking. This is the scenario in India, and this is the scenario in Finland. And I'm not here to judge which is right or wrong. We just have a thinking. I mean, many times I wonder, like, for example, you go to the bus station and things like that. In Finland, people automatically stand in queues. You know, nobody is pausing other. Everybody follows its rule. I mean, like the line and everything. This may not be the same in India. It's also because to do with population in India, where so many people, you always have to be, you know, competitive and make it fast. You know, this is not the same in Finland because it's also due to do with the population. Because the population is less, everybody have a place in the bus and things like that. So you need to have a deep thinking over this picture, and this is something that applies in business environment in both the countries as well. So the world view of Indians is very different from Finns, and that can also determine their behavior in terms of how they perceive life and things like that. And then of course we have been discussing a lot about culture, how the culture influences people's behavior, and how those behaviors affect the business and everything. So it's very important to understand. Yes, there is a big cultural difference between both the countries, and people don't have see the values same way in both the countries. But then this can also be a big strength. And sometimes that, you know, when I work with Finns and we travel to India for many occasions, many Indians have a very, very good welcome or positive image about Finnish people, because it's also that some of the characteristics of Finnish culture and things like that has a very good image in India. For example, in Finnish society is still equality society. You are not being, you know, you are not respected because of your power, title, and education or money. And people are very humble, and people are very, 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 you know. Sometimes I end up meeting with people in Finland who actually speak with you very normally, and you end up realizing this person can be a millionaire, or he's a big CEO of a company and everything. And sometimes this can be a very big advantage in India. People think that, okay, you are a down-to-earth person. You are a person whom you can trust also. That can also be a positive thing in some of the business negotiation and things like that. So it's very important to understand Indians do not view work and life same as the Finns. Well, there are a lot of challenges in India in terms of business. I mean, India, as we said, it's a country with a lot of complexity. The Indian governance framework can be a very big challenge in terms of federal and state structures. The different laws can be applicable in different states and different parts of India, and the same with the culture as well. And then the lack of infrastructure in certain areas may be the challenge as well. In some of the parts in India have excellent infrastructure, and some of the parts may not have the similar kind of infrastructure. So you need to be very careful when you want to do business, when you want to invest, in which part of India you want to do. But then again, India is also a new country. You know, it's like we got independent 70 years before, and 70 years before we didn't have India. We had India and region with the different kind of kingdoms and things like that, and then we become one nation. We all believed in the idea of India, and now we are like also a new country, you know. So we are still in transition, and Indian infrastructure and all these things are growing now. Probably in the next 15 years, this Indian infrastructure and all these things can be very advanced in terms of this. And at the same time, like it's also an opportunity for many Finnish companies. If you can sell your products and services in building India, then why not? That's also a huge opportunity. That challenge can also be utilized for investing and things like that. Well, this bureaucracy is something that's unavoidable. I kind of think that every country has bureaucracy in its own way, so as India as well. And then, of course, this bureaucracy sometimes can be a challenge as well when you have to deal with it. I mean, there are ways to deal with it, and then again, how each individual, each organization approach to it and do things to avoid bureaucracy. Well, Indian culture can be a big challenge, and of course this diversity within India can also be a big challenge. As I said before, Indian culture is not, there's no such as one Indian culture. Like, you know, there's a huge variation in terms of what is Indian culture. So you need to understand those challenges are obvious in any country. And of course that can be overcome. You know, when you think about a lot of big companies in India, you know, all these companies are doing business for so many years. They're still very successful in India. And in spite of a lot of differences, a lot of challenges, a lot of, you know, a lot of obstacles, many of the companies are very successful in India. And it's because they also have understood the Indian mindset and things like that, and how they have localized their products and services and things like that. Well, as we discuss this concept of time, can be a challenge as well, of course. I mean, you always have to think how smartly you can agree on the deadline, things like that. And particularly whenever there is going to be a negotiation, when you're going for a negotiation in India, don't go with strict schedules, go with relaxed schedules. I mean, try to spend more time with the partners to understand them and spend more time with them. I mean, like even when they visit India and things like that. Of course, finding the right people and establishing trust is also a big challenge in India. People do have, you do end up meeting people with a lot of different intentions. You need to understand the partner whom you can trust. I mean, there is also a big Indian community in Finland, and whom you can always network as well, to whom you can get connections as well. Through them, you can get references, you can build your network in India as well. And lack of effective communication can also be a challenge and can lead to confrontation. Because you see that, as I said to you that, it doesn't mean you are communicating through email, it's going to work. No, you really need to communicate, speak with people. You need to create that kind of the rapport with the people. And even then, even if you are not able to have this proper communication, many times the misunderstandings happen. People understand the communication in several different ways, and then people have you know, their own prejudices and all these things. So you really need to have this proper communication channels to have a effective cooperation between India and Finland. Well, the education system can also be a challenge sometimes, because we have so fragmented education system within India. And when you want to find employees and things like that, you know, it can be a challenge. Sometimes people, companies do complain, we do not find the right people, right employees, resources with skilled, with the skills they expect. But then the expectation of skills is also a challenge, because you may not get the same kind of skill set what you get in Finland in India, and vice versa, because you see that it's also to do with education system, what kind of things. But then again, because of also the Indian education system, because of also several advantages, has also led many Indians to work in almost all top companies in the world. That's also one of the success stories, also Indian education system, that has also provided a lot of opportunities for people to work across the globe. So you need to also understand this fragmented education system and how you can select the right people, what kind of resources you want to have in your company and everything. I mean, these are some of my findings through my research projects in India. I mean, from Finland to India, you know, like Finns have a lot of positive experience in India in terms of business. I've been meeting with several Finnish business people who have been doing, who are doing or dealing with India in terms of business. I have met with some interesting people who have been doing business with India for like 40 years. Some people who have been working for so long. I mean, people do have a lot of positive experiences in India as well. And India is actually viewed as a land of opportunities by many Finns. A lot of Finns are really excited about how big is the market and what kind of opportunities it provides for growth. I mean, like I have met with some of the companies who have their biggest revenue coming from India as well, you know. And one of the important thing also that has been told by many business people whom I met in Finland, they also said that you need to really have experience in India to be successful in having business in India. I mean, you need to have a lot of experiences. The experience doesn't mean you have to live there. The experience can be that you have more understanding in India about by watching movies or videos and by reading books and things like that. You need to have those experiences. That can actually ease the situation. You are kind of more understanding India, and that gives you a lot of positive thoughts on India. And I don't say that all is easy in India. I mean, of course, there are a lot of challenges. In spite of the challenges, you are still able to be successful in India. I mean, anybody with the right idea, right concept, right attitude, they can be very successful in India. Any company which has an excellent product, if that product that they can prove this is very, this can actually be very valuable for Indian customers, Indian consumers. I mean, I'm sure that they are going to be very successful. And understanding, of course, this cultural difference is very significant, because sometimes that people think, oh, people are people, we have the same needs, we all cry, we all laugh, you know. Of course, this is all universal. That is, I don't deny that. But then, how actually people exhibit and show their emotions is also very important. The emotional thing is also, you know, what kind of words you speak and how you exhibit. I mean, it also has to do with verbal and non-verbal differences as well. That's also one of the things you have to pay attention. And at the same time, by understanding the differences, you can also think about what kind of similarities you can bring to this conversation. What kind of similarities you can identify between your culture and Indian culture can also be a very good thing. So, I mean, all of the interviews, I mean, all of the leaders whom I met has always been saying that the cultural knowledge is very important thing in India. If you do not have this cultural knowledge about India, you're going to fail in a big way. This was some of the things that they have been saying. And of course, they also said you need to be open-minded. It's very important to be open-minded in India. Sometimes we go from the Western world to India, and we start comparing, we start complaining. Oh, this is not like my country. This is like this. This is. Then when you start comparing, you kind of get disappointed. So do not have always this expectation. Take as India as it is. Then things go smoothly. When you start complaining and comparing, this can be a challenge. If you're not open-minded, it will be very difficult to do business in India. You really have to be open-minded in order to be successful. Of course, we talked a lot about relationship, and of course, Finnish people have a lot of positive image and trust among Indians. A lot of Indians admire Finland and Finnish education system and Finns. They're excited to know more about Finland. As I mean, like in this past 5 years, as this education, Finnish education has been considered as one of the best system in the world. A lot of Indians are knowing about Finland. They're very curious to know about Finland and why the education system is very successful and things like that. Of course, I whenever they ask me, I tell them that, you know what, of course, the Finnish education system is very successful. It's because also about the Finnish culture, equality, and things like that. So it has to do with a lot of their, you know, the system, Finnish education system is not that just happened in overnight. They have built it for so many years based on this principle of equality, and that has been the reason that the Finnish education system is one of the advanced system in the world. So Finns have positive image and trust among Indians, and a lot of Indians recognize Finland is one of the best countries in the world and things like that. So overall, through my research that I have been having I've been meeting with a lot of good Finnish business leaders who have, of course, they do have had their challenges in India. Then over the period of time, and I think all those challenges become very normal thing. It's not a big thing anymore. I mean, of course, even you are doing business in your own country, there can be challenge. Even if you want to work with your own people, there can always be misunderstanding. There can always be challenge. The same applies to India as well. So I kind of see that you know, that those challenges and obstacles can also be you know, converted into opportunities, and you can make it positive as well. Well, I just was thinking to give some takeaway. As we discussed before, communication is the biggest difference as well as challenge in India. And of course, you have to build relationship and establish trust, which is crucial. And experience in dealing with India makes a huge difference. And I mean, like, you know, that there is, yes, there is cultural difference between India and Finland. Same, if you think about Finland, even within Finland, there is a lot of cultural difference. You look, go from north, east, you know, south, west, wherever, like within Finland, there is so big difference in terms of culture. The same in India, like in any other country. I mean, it can be a huge hindrance, but then how you handle it, how you as an individual understand these differences and how you can create this into a easy thing, it all depends on you as well. Of course, if you want to have a very successful cooperation between India and Finland and between the Finnish and Indian organization, you have to deal it with a culturally intelligent manner. You need to pay a lot of attention to culture, and that's very crucial. And that is the way to go forward. I mean, the business cooperation between Finland and India can be enhanced to a new level only if Finnish organization approach India in culturally intelligent manner, and it applies to as well to India. So once if it is approached in a culturally intelligent manner, I think things can be very easy, and you can be very successful in dealing with India. And this is one of the key messages that I would like to highlight. You need to have that mindset to understand and appreciate other cultures and how those cultures can be used, you know, understood, and how those information can be used in terms of business, doing business in a country like India. So I think I would like to end up my presentation with this quote said by Mahatma Gandhi. A nation's culture resides in the hearts and in the souls of its people. I mean, pretty much what we have been discussing today is about Indian culture and how it reflects in business environment. So I hope you had a good understanding about India. If you would like to discuss, please, you feel free to contact me. I'll be happy to give you whatever information you need on India in terms of business and business culture. And thanks a lot for your attention, and good luck.